Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question, simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community.
Greetings. Ken Woodward here. Welcome back to another episode of Curated Questions. Together, we engage inquisitive humans about how they use questions to navigate and make sense of our world. I am a fellow traveler and pilgrim on this journey, and I'm glad you are here. Today's conversation is with sisters Shreya Venkat and Isha Venkat. Shreya and Isha were inspired by their parents' model of serving those in need and founded the nonprofit Nest for Us, that is NEST, numeral 4, and then US, as a philanthropic platform built upon kindness, generosity, and social good. With the mission of making the world better through kindness by mobilizing volunteers worldwide to advance progress in societal issues and spark equitable solutions for the greater good. Through 5 core programs, they address over 14 of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Their vision is to empower people of all demographics to create a more compassionate and inclusive world for everyone, everywhere. Their work has received significant recognition, including the George H.W. Bush Points of Light Award in 2020, which was co-chaired by all 4 living former presidents. Their year-end 2023 numbers include 7,000 volunteers, 85,000 blessing bags, and over $4.2 million of meals donated across 30 countries and 6 continents. The stats are impressive. What makes this nearly insane is the siblings' effort started when they were ages 13 and 10. Shreya is now 22 years old, the CEO of Nest for Us, and a global health accelerated master's student at Georgetown University. She is pursuing a career in health policy, combining her passions for health equity, climate advocacy, and volunteerism to aid marginalized communities worldwide. Isha is 19 years old, the COO of Nest for Us and a Georgia Institute of Technology majoring in public policy with a minor in global development. Over the past decade, she has contributed over 7,000 hours of service, engaging people through a wide array of global service campaigns. I was inspired when serving alongside them during a snowy Martin Luther King Jr. event a couple years ago. Their deep experience leading volunteers, minding the chaos, expressing gratitude, and empathizing with the end recipients was remarkable. Shreya and Isha, welcome to Curated Questions.
Thank you so much for having us, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. We're so excited to be here today to share a little bit about the work that we do and a little bit about ourselves as well.
We're ready to ask some good questions.
Sweet. Love it. Let's talk it. All right. So when did you first understand the power of questions?
As me and Shreya, when we were kids, and still to this day, we've always been asking that question, why? It's always like, why this, why that? I know our parents got sick of it after a while. You know, we were those kids asking, are we there yet? At a road trip that we took, always questioning. And that kind of took flight and form in a lot of different ways. We would always love going to the library and going and reading books with our dad and going to different science museums. I think we've gone to every science museum and children's museum in like the United States.
Nice.
And just really exploring all these different topics and really been able to open our minds to so many different experiences, both inside and outside of school as well. And I know we've had a lot of different experiences too that have helped shape that too.
Yeah. And also thinking about technology, I think that's a really huge aspect of our upbringing as well. Because when we were like in elementary school, which is where this whole journey of community service had started for us, it was actually a time where technology was not central or centric to learning and to creativity and all of that. It was a lot of more in-person, personable kind of connection building. And so we were actually in school, early in school, when we saw technology start to enter and permeate the education system. And so that was also a really interesting transition for us as we were growing up, both in academia and then also in our personal and professional lives, to see how, you know, how we can change to this adapting world and how we can still maintain some of the values that have been so crucial to our upbringing, even as technology has proliferated our world.
Yeah, and even with that, we've also been able to have the blessing to be able to travel a lot too, especially since we were so young. And I think seeing a lot of the world and being exposed to a lot of different cultures and a lot of different people, even with the rise of technology and even before that too, has definitely helped us also ask more questions and think about the world in different ways, being able to see so much of it and be exposing with all these different informations and people too. And I think those experiences really shaped who we are as people, just starting so young and being able to have those opportunities and experiences.
Amazing. Travel, what does that look like for you? I guess maybe you break it into the categories of back in the day. How had questions been a part of, or where were some of the places that you went to? And then maybe how did questions inform some of your experience, either preparation-wise or while you were there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's definitely been a difference and some similarities as well from back in the day travel to now. And back in the day before Nest for us, it was really all about family building and team bonding, learning about different cultures. And it still is to this day. But I think a unique aspect of the traveling that we do nowadays is there's also some sort of component of organization, Nest for us, that you talked about as well, that we bring into all of our travel. So I think some new questions that we've started to think about is like, how can we, you know, bring maybe the ideas and the magic of Nest for Us to this country, or be able to connect and collaborate with similar organizations that exist globally as well? So I think those kind of questions have popped up, especially as we've done some recent travel to places like Rome, Italy, Australia, New Zealand, India, which is our home country where our family's from. So these different places that we've been able to go through to in the recent years has really sparked new questions where we're thinking about helping and service and really connecting cross-culturally in different ways than we had when we were first traveling, when we were younger, really more for pleasure and for leisure as well.
Yeah. And I want to add a little tidbit from my own personal journey. And so very exciting opportunity I've gotten through my degree. I'm a global health major. And so one of the aspects of our degree is to actually study abroad for 14 weeks to do research. And I'm adding the social impact work aspect of it, as Isha had mentioned. And so that's a really cool opportunity in which I see academia and social impact work kind of coincide. But then I also get to bring my own, the pleasure and the leisure aspects of traveling into this as well, because it's a new continent. I'm actually going to be in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And so never been to Africa, never been to Tanzania. And that's going to be something that's exciting in a lot of different fronts. And I think it really does combine the aspects that Isha just touched upon of the professional aspect, the education aspect, and then also the personal growth aspect.
Because there's always so much to learn when you travel. Even if you travel to the same place twice, there's always something new and more connections to be made. So it's really, we always say like, we're so thankful for those experiences. And I think our total country count is 29 to this day, which is cool.
Wow. Nice. Necking down a little bit to think about as you go into a country, what specifically would be questions that you're thinking about as you have this targeted location, and then you've got these buckets, the personal, educational, and then Nest for Us. What are the questions that you think about in those three buckets for that particular location to engage with the local communities? What does that look like for you?
That's a great question. And I think there's been a lot of reflection on that too. And I touched on Tanzania, and Isha can pick one of the many countries we've been to.
Exactly.
But for Tanzania, I think, so we actually work with a lot of partners virtually who are based in Africa, including those in Tanzania. So we've actually connected through Zoom many times and even shipped different like school supplies and books and sports equipment and all of those kind of things abroad as well. And so those are the types of service aspects that we've engaged in the means that we can. But I think a question that comes up when you think about in-person service serving is not necessarily how can I bring Nest for Us activities to Tanzania, but it's how can I bring Nest for Us to Tanzania in a way that fits the Tanzanian context. Because a lot of the times you think about the work that we do here in the United States is wildly different than the work that you would do anywhere else abroad, because the needs and the people that you're serving and serving with are completely different. And I think it's very important. It's a question we always ask ourselves is, who are we working with? Who are we supporting? And what are the needs as said by them? so that we can go and provide support as needed by the community. So I think that's like the big, if you could summarize the entire experience in one question, I think that would be that question.
Yeah, and I can touch on that too and give an example of when this question was in action with one of our other countries that we went to, I think 2 years ago, which was India, which is our home country. And with going with the same idea in mind of like, how do we not impose our own maybe views or prior biases of what we think social impact work looks like on another country that we have a connection with, but we don't have that innate, intimate connection that the people, the local people there who have lived there their whole lives know. So for example, for one of our programs, Nest Buddies, it's our birthday in a box program. So here in America, you know what that looks like is putting in like a cupcake or a birthday cake, things that we usually traditionally eat here for our birthday. But in India, it's a lot different. They have different traditional sweets that they give on their birthdays that are made specifically for that special day. Another important question we had to ask was like, how do we also remain like culturally conscious and make sure that we're not just putting in a birthday cake, but the kid's going to be like, I don't actually eat this. I eat something else for a birthday, and connecting it in that sense too. So it was a really cool learning experience to think like, how can we best listen and learn to the community members there in order to create the best change possible and a change that really fits well in the context of the country itself. So those are some examples of ways that we've been able to think, and global action is great, but we don't want to be a bother or cause more problems by implementing our own solutions. So I think it's really important for us to talk with the people and have these connections that are authentic and beneficial for everyone involved.
Beautiful. That being aware of targeting or serving the local need and then listening to what that actual need is, was that learned through mistake or did you get voices early on in your process of getting things going where you heard that and that became a part of your process early on? Or
yeah,
how did
I think
that
the
look?
Most important thing that we try to do is always take feedback and provide like a safe space where anybody is able to ask us any questions and express anything that they feel is necessary. So I think it's a combination of things that we've tried to implement as like, not like safeguards, but thinking like, oh, if this is, we ask questions about during our projects or initiatives of like anticipating challenges and being able to face that, but also being able to accept feedback if something arises and maybe you didn't plan for it, and then adapting accordingly as well. So I think it's both sides of the piece in a lot of different ways too.
And I think a lot of, as we work with different countries, it's new for everyone for the most part. And so a lot of it is learning through conversation. And that's something we always do before, even if we're, for example, trying to do something in, when I think of a country we haven't done something in, which, oh, Taiwan, randomly, we might have done something in Taiwan, but we'll use Taiwan as an example. So if we're going and wanting to do something in Taiwan, maybe it's implementing some sort of zero hunger component. We don't just go in, find an organization, and send them an email, like, this is what we want to do. And we're going to send the supplies and that's it. It's we first, usually we get reached out to, but or we reach out and we set up a call. We set up a meeting where we can talk. We can get to know each other, really understand the people behind the work that's being done. And then through those discussions, we learn and we listen to what is going on, what is happening, what is the mission, what is the values of the specific organization, group, individual that is doing whatever work that is in that community. That conversation has been absolutely pivotal to us throughout our entire journey, especially as we look internationally, even domestically, but I think this is even more crucial internationally.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people, like when they think about Nest for Us, of course, they think about the different actions that we've taken. But we like to say we operate through a dual approach of awareness plus action, because we know taking action is important, but you can't take action without having that awareness or understanding the issues that are going on in the community locally, nationally, and globally. So I think that's a really important aspect that we've tried to implement through one of our programs as well, Nest Inspires, where we actually provide different like workshops and webinars talking about these issues, fostering those spaces where people can talk to each other from all across the world, have that dialogue, which is also just as important as taking action too.
What are common bad assumptions folks make when taking some of that step?
Is this in what sense, if I can ask for clarity?
Sure. Let's take your Taiwan example. If it was to go bad, which obviously we don't want that to ever happen for you, but if it was to go sideways, what might have been some of the assumptions that folks have made, like you were talking about, it's you have these Zoom calls. Why? Because you're not going to go in with this assumption and say, I'm going to take what we do in DC and copy paste because it's not going to work. So are there any particular assumptions that you see, whether it's industry wide or just, hey, I want to do good, so I'm going to assume I'm going to send you a bunch of these clothes or whatever. I'm going to go out and spend buy a bunch of these things and give them to you. What are some of those assumptions that somebody like myself stepping in, trying to do good, may make? And it might be better to, hold on just a second, pause, ask a good question, or what might that look like?
I think it comes from being someone doing work from a Western point of view, I think is really important to consider. And again, for the most part, when you're looking abroad, there is a lot of assumptions that are being made on both sides of what a Western outlook on social impact is versus a not Western outlook on services. Okay. And we see this a lot also. So in terms of the support that we provide, a lot of it is capacity building centric at the moment with our international partners. And so we have shipped several different supplies, like school supplies, especially books, educational materials. But for the most part, a lot of our support has been through advocacy, like professional development, those aspects. So for the most part, those don't tend to be approached with much hesitation per se. But I think a lot of the times we see that there could be language barriers, there could be like digital divide situations. And so there are instances where we as young people who have only been doing this work for 8 years and are self-funding, getting funding from mini grants, not as much resources, even though we do have international exposure. I think there is an assumption that when you come from a Western point of view, your first instinct is to give money or to give resources. And that's almost an expectation from the other side. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it's important for us to showcase the value of the other aspects of service. Now, while these supplies and resources are essential, we know that empowerment, we know that leadership, professional development, providing skill sets to young people especially is absolutely essential to ensure productivity in any context. And so I think for us, going in with that mentality and it being able to share and discuss why we think that's important and learn from them and see if there are any gaps in those areas that we can support, I think that's where we tend to start. And then if it goes well, and as it goes well, we get to then engage in more conversations and see how we can provide further, more tangible support.
Yeah. And I'd also go on the flip side and talk about another assumption as well. I think from the more developed side, when we think about the people like our volunteers and then the people that we serve, I think there's also an assumption sometimes that, like these people, they don't have any money. They don't live with anything. So they're just going to be okay with any type of food. Like they just need a can to survive. That's enough. And we really try to break that assumption because people are people no matter what. People have preferences. People should have preferences and should be able to have access to whichever kind of food or resources that they like. They're not just numbers on a paper that all need like 5 cans of rice or 5 cans of beans. So that's something, an assumption that we've really tried to break too with organization by being able to have 5 core programs. We actually started initially with just one, but we saw that people need a wide variety. They shouldn't just be constricted to just one thing. So we provide things like fun things too. Like we have like pastries and cookies and chips. And we were talking about like birthday items. Even this morning, we were giving out toys as well. So we really try to approach it as not just like these people are below us or there's a hierarchy or anything like that. But it's like, these are people too who have their own unique needs and preferences for the foods and the resources that we provide. So we want to make sure that we treat everybody with that same kindness and empathy that we would give anybody else, regardless of their socioeconomic status.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. If we go back a little bit to the beginning, what questions did you consider as you were standing things up, as you were developing Nest? What were some of those early things that you're considering and wrestling with?
So there was a lot, for sure. There was a lot of questions at the beginning.
And there still are.
And there still are, but different questions. So I think as you mentioned earlier, I was 13 when we officially started Nest for Us.
I was 10.
And so you can imagine
it's amazing
what would be going on in a 10-year-old's brain and a 13-year-old brain. So I think from the get-go, something that we had in our brains is, and this has been ingrained in us for so long, there are so many people in this world that don't have access to basic necessities and support systems that we are oh so privileged to have. And for us, it was that thinking of, why couldn't we be the people to be able to step up and spark change and change even one person's life? And a lot of that had to do with the way that we were brought up and seeing the impact that we could make on even just one person. And I think that started off quite early for us back in elementary school when we'd be exposed to different, when we'd come along with our parents, especially to different community service events. It could be things like ETA events, like library, different fairs, et cetera, et cetera. Like a lot of different events that were happening just locally in our community. And we'd come along and see what's going on. And we had so much fun doing that when we were younger. At first, of course, like waking up at 6 a.m. for a PTA breakfast, any kid is gonna be like, oh, why? But then going and seeing it and experiencing it and seeing how excited our teachers got, how excited the community got. When they see kids coming and doing things like that, it was like, oh, this is really cool. So how can we bring this kind of joy, this kind of passion in a space where other families and other friends can come together and enjoy it as much as we do? And so that was really the driving question that led us to officially create Nest for Us.
Exactly. And I think specifically another thing that helped kickstart our idea, our initial idea, was our first program that we created, which was Nest Nurtures. And this was really a lot to do with our personal experiences and things that we witnessed since we were younger as well. We live in Northern Virginia, which is super close to DC. So we'd always be there on the weekends sightseeing, doing the regular DC tourist activities. And we'd always notice homeless people sitting on the corner of the sidewalk with the signs, hungry, need food. And you'd see that everywhere across the city, in numerous cities all across the world, especially when we travel as well. Like we mentioned, you would see the need that's just present there, and people just walk past it and ignore it. And on the flip side, we think about our own schools, so much food being in the cafeteria going to waste, and all this abundance of resources just thrown in the trash when it could definitely be better served and better used. So that was another question that we thought of, is there's food waste on one side and there's people going hungry on the other. How do we bridge that gap and connect that food that would better be served in the hands of those in need rather than being thrown away in landfills? So that was really that driving force where we wanted to create our first program, Nest Nurtures. And then you can talk about why we have four more programs in addition to Nest Nurtures.
Yeah, so we realized that not everyone might necessarily be passionate about getting involved in hunger. So obviously everyone is aware that addressing zero hunger is important. I hope so, because it is. But we also realized that everyone could have different passions and different connections to causes that they resonate with within the community. And so a question that drove this thinking was, how do we involve young people, families, and different groups of people in a way that allows them to impact the community in a way that they're passionate about? And you'll hear us say this, if anyone comes and hears this talk at like fairs or at just like injuries, like anything, we will always say, for us, Nest for Us is all about creating opportunities for people to give back passionately in a way that they're passionate about, to impact causes in a way that interests them. And in some sense, in some form, you'll hear that. And that really has stuck with us since the beginning. If we're thinking about something that has stayed with us since the very beginning, that question is something we continue to revisit. And so we, as Isha had mentioned, we started with just Nest Nurtures, and we've branched out to four more in addition. So one is Nest Tutors. It's our quality education program. We have Nest Cares, our kindness program. So finding a program that connects directly to our mission and exemplifies that. Nest Buddies, we had referenced earlier, our birthday in a box program. And then Nest Inspires, our leadership and professional development program.
Yeah, and I think another question to build off of that is, with all these programs and all these ideas that we had in elementary and middle school and all these things, I think another one was like, how do we get people to join us? How do we get our volunteers? How do we get people to believe in our mission and help out at all of our events? So I think going back to that first question that we were talking about is like the questions that propelled us. I think technology, we were thinking about this new thing is rising, it's growing, and how can we use these different things like social media and really tap into our fellow young people across the locally, nationally, globally, and see how we can join hands and really make volunteering fun, accessible, interesting, and be, like Shreya was saying, a way that people can come in and have fun with their friends and family, just like we did when we were younger. So I think that's another interesting question for us too, is without people and community support, these ideas would just be ideas. So that was another thing that we had to consider starting out, is reaching out to our local schools, our friends, our family friends, anybody who was close to us in our community, and then thinking, how do we scale? How do we get more people involved? And that's where technology came in. So I think all these different questions built upon each other. And we still think, like Shreya said, about that main question is getting young people and families and friends and people all across the world involved in a meaningful way. So we've stuck with that question. We think about that one a lot, and it's definitely helped us get to where we are today.
That was touching on exactly that. It was one of the things that has stuck with me the most from that day that I had the opportunity to join you, was that you had all of these different stations, and I didn't participate in the station, but it's the one that impacted me the most. And that was when you had the younger kids writing the little cards. Yes. And so how to give a description of it, you had all these just 3x5 cards or all these cards out there, and you had like little recommendations just on pages for these kids to write notes of encouragement and all these different topics that you would slip into all these bags that you're using. We've got a bunch of elderly folks like in the 90s and 100 range. And to think about how that would impact one of them to get a card from someone or a note that's someone that's a child, that one really resonated with me. And it was such a joy to see all the little kids tackling this table and going at it. And they wrote a bunch of cards. So as I reflected back on that, to think of the impact that you're having on the receiver, the joy that's had by all these kids using their creativity, using their skills as a youngster, and being able to create something that's going to go for this greater good. I just thought that was a beautiful example. And to me, that was this broad vision of you understanding the impact that you're seeking to make through practical means, and exactly to your point of what is it that each individual person, the volunteer wise, what means something to them, and you're giving opportunities for that to occur. It's just show up or give you a call, get to your website, whatever, plug in, there's something here for you, and you can express it in one of these many different ways. So just really appreciated that one particular example that I had a chance to witness. That was amazing. I appreciate that.
I love that you bring up notes of encouragement. That's one of our favorite things that we do at Nest for Us. And it's something really special because, like you said, our mission is to really spread kindness and joy in people's lives. And I think those notes do a really good job of it. And I think to your point as well, we always like to share a fun story with our notes too, because you know, we underestimate the power of words, power of questions, power of these seemingly small things that actually have a really big difference. And even we did. When we were starting out, we didn't, you know, gain our thousands of volunteers overnight. It was a lot of consistent hard work day in and day out. And at times, sometimes we were young. We can get discouraged, face setbacks and all of these different things. And sometimes we had those questions of, am I really making a difference? Is this really having an impact? And I think one time we were serving in DC, helping those people that we would see on the sidewalk since we were very young. And we were giving out our bags, like you were mentioning, our little food bags filled with notes. And we were doing that for a couple of months at that time. And we were there one time, and one of the men that we were serving, who was unhoused, had come up to us with a big stack of notes in his hand. And we were like, what's this? And he had told us that on days that he's feeling sad or feeling lonely or feeling like nobody's there for him in the community, he takes out these notes and reads them. And it reminds him that there's somebody out there that cares. There's somebody out there that loves me and is there in my corner. And that really made our day and realize, wow, like this is really making an impact. Wow. And even just that one person, we've changed that one person's life. And that definitely is a story that happened years ago. And we continue to bring it up in everything and every person that we talk to, because it really did make an impact on us and reminded us of the power of words and the power of just being there for someone. Oftentimes people think, you know, I don't have any money. How can I volunteer? I'm not an adult. I can't help. But it's really those simple things. And that's really easy. Everybody can take out a nice little 3x5 card and write, we love you, and send it to somebody. And it really can change someone's entire life. So those are things that we try to push, especially for young people. Because when you learn something when you're young, it tends to stick with you when you're older. So trying especially to go to schools and talk about kindness and engage them in kind acts and different things like that is really important to us as well.
Ooh, I want to bring up a quick thing that we do for younger kids as well. So for the notes,
anyone can do it. I want to also clarify, I know in an example, kids were doing it, but we work with a lot of different corporate businesses as well.
Like,
we went to Amazon last month. We had Intact Tech, Cisco. Like, we have all these different corporate teams that also love writing notes and doing some of our other projects, but the notes are definitely a fan favorite. But the other initiative that we actually started a few years ago is called our Kind Nest Carts. And so these things are literally mobile carts with kindness reinforcing items in it, little tidbits, and we give them to classrooms. They're meant for classrooms. And basically, the whole point of that is to encourage kids to share, or students to share, what kind acts or any kind stories or experiences that they've had. Maybe they'll do the kindness cart once a week. So like on Fridays, they would share, this is something that I did kind this week that I want to share with the class, like a show and tell form. And once they share that, they get a kindness reinforcing little present. And so these are things like bookmarks, they can be books, they can be bracelets, stickers, little things like that. But what these things do is more than rewarding good behavior, it's showing kids that when you do kind acts, you feel really good. And it really, again, using the power of words, it reinforces this positive behavior and showcases, or it provides kids to showcase their good work to others as well, in hopes of inspiring their classmates to join along with them. And so that's what we've seen our kindness cart be really powerful in. And it's something that we've seen teachers get really creative with as well, and really have like friendly class competitions. And it's just really, it's a really fun way to bring students together around kindness. And so that's just an additional thing that all actually came about from a lot of our different visits to schools. We do a lot of presentations at schools, at like Girl Scout, Boy Scout troops, sports teams, all these different groups. So we learned that this is something that kids tend to like.
Yeah, it's really important for us too, because even if we go back to questions we were asking in the beginning, is sometimes events or in our community volunteer events, you'd have to be like 18 or older and things like that. So we would always think, like, we're young people and we can do it. So like, why don't we have the opportunity? So I think providing opportunities, especially for young people to give back, like we have people as young as 3 and 4 on our team, as old as like 80s coming together and volunteering. So I think it's really important to show people that you don't have to be an adult or necessarily have any special skills to volunteer. And there's no restriction or age limit for Nest for Us, which I think is another reason we've been able to grow so much, is we literally, if you like this program, if you really like Nest Tutors, if you really like Nest Cares, you can go dive deep into that program. And if you want to do 2 of them out of the 5, all 5, you can pick and choose whatever you'd like. So I think having those different opportunities has really helped bring a lot of people on board on our team and really spark a lot of kindness across the community.
That's great. And the cart idea, something that flickered through my mind here also, is that by virtue of going through that process, the kids are having the opportunity to publicly communicate something that they're doing, right? Where we so often say, don't say the good things that you're doing. And there's an element to that where it's not the advertising, but this is a way to genuinely share and to be able to express that joy that comes with it amongst all of your peers. And there, I think there's a real beauty in that being able to say it out loud that, yes, I did something intentionally to be kind, and this is what it looked like.
Yeah.
So that's a neat
thank
thing
you
that you're
doing. And I just want to add a quick point on that, the importance of this being in a classroom as well. A lot of the times within a classroom setting, as students, we understand this, we get siloed in academia, which is all well and good, but there are a lot of aspects of community that could go missing within a classroom setting. And so this is another opportunity for teachers to be able to bring aspects and values and cultivate these environments for students to feel like they can openly share something that isn't necessarily graded or something that has a academic pressure put on it. It's just something exciting for them to share. It could be inside school, it could be outside of school, it could be the simplest thing, but it's just an open environment for kids to share something really cool and kind that they did. And so that's another element to like the service learning aspect that we see within a classroom setting might be difficult to fit into a curriculum, but it's still a way to incorporate it within a classroom setting and encourages other students to learn about this in a learning environment and then take that and kind of implement it throughout their daily life.
Yeah, and I also like the way that you brought up publicly talking about what they've done as well. I think that young people are doing amazing work across the community, and they just need that space to be able to share that story. And I think even when we go to different schools, we always like to say, oh, like, what are some of the different kind acts or kind stories that you all have want to share with the group? And it's amazing to see like all the hands like shoot up, and we're like, wow. And it's just, it goes to show like just giving the opportunity and providing these spaces, and you can really see young people like flourish beyond anything that you can ever imagine. So I think that's an important thing that we've seen. Like, we were able to have those experiences mm-hmm. from our family, being able to have this idea and them not to say, oh, you guys are just kids, you know, you guys just focus on school. But for our parents to, you know, start and encourage those spaces really opened our and changed our lives, seriously. So for us to be able to hopefully maybe change the lives of the kids that we go through and give that space, I think is really beautiful and something so simple, but something really powerful.
You had just mentioned the community. You used the phrase go missing within the community. I'm going to take that one as a takeaway for me to think on the categories that quote go mm-hmm. missing, because it's not academia, because it's not reading, writing, arithmetic. And realistically, you're going to be living in community for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
So how can we incorporate some of this in? Because you don't have no idea if it's being incorporated exactly. at home or not, right? You both have experienced parents who are very community focused. And in a day when it's so focused on what's on the screen in front of us, that to have that broader view, that's remarkable that you're given this opportunity to help widen that view for all these kids and to have a tangible thing that they'll be able to hang their hat on at the end of the day and say, yes, I have done something this week.
Exactly.
That was intentional. Wow. As you've added some of these different projects and you've expanded beyond just the initial, the first one, nurture, is that right? All right. Paying attention. All right. So, what are the questions that you work through as you evaluate adding more of these opportunities or categories?
Yeah. So we always start with, and this is something that's a logical format that has seemingly worked for us over the years. So really starting with one, what is the problem? What are the things impacting the problem? Why is this a gap in our community? And this is not something that we sit in our room at our dining table and talk and be like, okay, so this is the problem, and then get up. It's we go out in the community, we observe, we watch, we listen, we talk with people. And from these conversations, we don't create programs like this. Yeah. It takes time. It takes a lot of observation. It takes piloting. It takes going and volunteering with other organizations. This is an absolutely immensely crucial step, and it's something that a lot of people tend to overlook, especially when they're trying to start their own initiatives. There is so much value in going and taking part in a wide variety of different activities outside of your focus area, if that makes sense, because you can actually learn a lot of skills. You can learn about who are the people, what are the gaps, and what can I do as an individual or as a team to be able to support. And so that ties into the second aspect of the problem analysis kind of portion, is who are the key stakeholders and partners and how do we engage with them? So this is everyone from volunteer family, local community partners, global partners, different sectors, so public, private, civil society, different age groups. You think the whole spectrum. How can we, who are the people behind the work that's going to be done? And then lastly, what are the challenges and barriers that you might face when you try to work with different people, bring different people together, and how can we prepare for that in a way that is equitable, that's fair, and that's not harming anyone in any way?
Yeah, and I think another kind of more looking more in the nuances of the project, as well as thinking about on the flip side, like, what does success look like? Like, how do we measure that? And we think about, like Shreya was saying, there's the people behind it. There's also the actual items themselves that we're going to be distributing. There's that joy, that kind of intangible aspect of the projects as well. So it's like, how do we see it? How do we notice it? How do we document it? How do we replicate it in the future as well is really important too. And we always try to build off of previous projects too, thinking about what are some things similar that we've done in the past, what worked, maybe what was some feedback that we thought might be different. And again, it goes back to that first question. I mean, again, how do we make young people, families, friends really find this volunteer service meaningful? And we've been able to incorporate a lot of that different feedback into strengthening our initiatives. I think one of them, it's a little silly, but one of them was, hey, we want music at the service projects. We want a way to bond with people. And we were like, yeah, that's a great idea. So we made an Nespresso playlist, and at every project, we go around and we ask everybody, what's a song that you want to add to the playlist? And it's continuing to keep growing with all the volunteers being able to impact them. It's a small little thing that we pack in the bags and we like to go around and do something fun. But I think that's like an example of a way we try to make the different services more exciting. Even this morning we had a project and we were playing Christmas music, holiday music and everything, because it's the holiday season. We're packing different toys. So just different things like that, where it might seem small, but really listening to the community, being able to adapt from a previous project where maybe that something that wasn't there before can be implemented in a fun way in the next project.
That's a great example. Very creative, though, of pulling in all the voices. And to your point of wanting to make this fun for those that are engaging, wherever they're coming from.
And that ties an aspect of our passion as well. Mm-hmm. Like our personal passion, if we're talking about how personal and professional do intersect, we love listening to music together. And we're like always on Spotify. Like she is so good at Spotify stuff. And so it's really fun to also bring our like personal passions outside of the community service bubble and bring it into community service and then vice versa. And so I think that's just another little tidbit that makes it a little extra fun for us.
Yeah, and it's also important for us too during projects to go around, learn everyone's name, ask what school they may be coming from or what area, because people were traveling from DC, Maryland, and Virginia, all across the community to come to our events and really just get to know the people who are coming here, get to know where they heard about Nespresso, why they're interested in volunteering, different things like that. And I think another interesting aspect too of our projects, we connect a lot with schools and students, right? And some of them may come in with other things like, hey, like I'm here for service hours or service learning hours or for other of these like extrinsic reasons. And I think it's an interesting point to note as well. And that might occur with other organizations across as well who may relate. But for us, what we've seen is sometimes people leave our projects and they actually forget to get their signature or they forget to get it signed because they're having a good time. And I think for us, we want to make sure that volunteer hours is good to get your foot in the door, get in the volunteer event. But whenever you leave the event, we want to make sure it's not those volunteer hours or those other extrinsic reasons aren't the only reason that you're coming to serve, that you leave with another reason, other reasons like, hey, I came here and I made a new friend, or I came here and I actually had a good time, or I actually helped a family get access to a whole bunch of resources. So that's something that we think is important, is we're not over here shaming people for not being just like us, always wanting to have that joy and that passion, because we know that's not realistic for everyone. But we want to make sure that when you're in the event and you leave the event coming out with this increased awareness and this increased idea of what social impact and service can actually mean.
It's a really interesting balance of the quantitative impact and the qualitative impact. Mm-hmm. So the quantitative impact can mean 2 hours of your time. Yeah. The qualitative impact is I was able to not only bring a lot of joy to others, but I got to take 2 hours off from sitting at my computer and doing homework, even though kids do your homework. But you take a break from sitting at your computer all day and going out and doing something in the community that got you on your feet, got you moving, getting connected with people. So you see that tangible and intangible aspect combine, and both are equally as beautiful. It's just figuring out the mindset. Excuse me, and seeing how those mindset shifts can evolve over time and across different programs.
Yeah, it's been so beautiful to see kids who may have come into Nespresso with this hours or this tunnel vision of what service may have meant. And we've seen them really come out of their shell, becoming leaders, actually, in a lot of our different projects that we do, stepping up. And again, like Shreya was mentioning earlier, like learning some of these skills of leadership and communication. Like you may think it's just a simple volunteer event, but there's so much that can go behind it. We've seen people become best friends through some of our projects, which is so cute to see, or even like mother-son duos or different duos like that, who who've been able to meet and strengthen bonds or create new ones. So it's really cool to see people get out of the volunteer event more than what they thought they would be getting out of it coming in. So I think we've been able to have a lot of like successful examples of that. And it's just great to see that as we continue growing as an organization.
For the volunteers, are there any questions that you use to engage when they're coming in? If somebody's, I am here, I'm here to get my service hours, I am here to check a box. Anything that you do, any question wise in that world that you use to engage, to perhaps break them out of that shell a little bit
quicker? So we always ask what volunteers prefer to engage in. We don't even call them service projects anymore, actually. We call them community give back events. And that's because we've actually, we used to only do one project per like event, but now we do several projects at one event. And so when volunteers come in, they can essentially pick and choose what type of activities they want to take part in. So maybe we'll ask our volunteers, are you guys really feeling like, what? Which of these projects are you really feeling like engaging in today? And so even just asking that, instead of just saying, you go there, asking them what their preferences are, and then providing them, okay, then based on what they say, oh, maybe you can try out this. This is how we do this. What do you think about this? Is this something you're interested in? And then if that doesn't work, then we dig a little deeper. We go, okay, so what are your passions? What are you interested in? And these are genuine questions that we ask. And then that second line of questioning, usually for the most part, tends to get them more comfortable and provides a more open space. There are, we are not denying this, there are people that come. We'll ask the first set of questions, not a positive response. We'll ask the second round of questions, not a positive response. But that's okay. And for us, that's really, it's an important skill, important thing that we've learned over the years is you can't force anyone to do anything. And it's not fair to force anyone to do anything. But the best that you can do is cultivate the environment, an environment for anyone who wants to be there or who doesn't want to be there to feel as welcome and as fun and as enjoyable of an experience as possible for them to have. So that's our end goal, is to make sure that people who come to our project, regardless of what mindset they come and leave with, are able to take part in something that is meaningful in some sort of way.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I think the biggest thing that we try to do is always just talk. I think sometimes that is understated, if that makes sense. Like, you know, some volunteer events, like Shrey was saying, you're assigned somewhere and the supervisor goes somewhere else and you never see them again and you're just doing the same thing over and over. But we're literally there going around to all the tables, surveying, talking to people, talking about their school and their hobbies, what they do for fun. Again, like the playlist, like what songs do they like, and trying to connect with them, not just on the, okay, have you packed this bag? Is it all the way full? All of that, which is also important questions to ask, but also asking them more about themselves. And I think, like Shrey was saying, some people may not be receptive, and that's okay. Some people need that extra little push, and that's okay too. And some people are already receptive, which is awesome. We want to make sure that we can make sure that anybody can feel comfortable and feel open and ready to engage in whatever level that they're ready to engage at when they come into our event.
Nice. Beautiful. A lot of what we've just talked about seems like it's really at the local level. You had also mentioned that you'll do these things online, whether it's the tutoring and the rest. So how is it different or maybe similar between the in-person events versus now these events that are literally spanning the globe? Does that change for you?
Definitely. Okay. So this is a fantastic question because, and I don't mean to bring COVID into everything, but COVID is it's a big factor in the question that you just
asked. And led us to ask ourselves a lot of questions.
Definitely. And so I think when you think in person versus virtual, there are some just logistical differences. Of course, there is more genuine engagement when you're in person. You are surrounded by people. You can cultivate that environment in a room, like in a physical room. When you're virtual, you can do a lot of these aspects. You can still provide a space, even though it's across the screen, like we're doing now, where you feel connected to a person. And we learned subtle ways to do this, whether it be eye contact, focus, hand motions, energetic voices, like things like that is something. These are skills that we've learned over the years, both speaking in person and speaking online. And so these are just so like the way that you talk and the way that you acknowledge people is something that's shared both in person and virtually, and is something that is seamless across and is equally valuable. And so those are things, if you're going to talk similarities, I think are things that stay consistent. And I think it also depends on the types of people that we're talking to and working with. Yeah. The way that we talk with younger kids is much different than the way that we talk with corporate leaders, or the way that we talk with our peers, the way that we talk with teachers. All of these different groups are completely different, and they necessitate different approaches in the way that you're conveying information and opportunities.
Yeah. And going back to the COVID of all of this is really, we started, like we mentioned, Espress 8 years ago, and all of it was in person. We had all of our projects in person. Everything was going great. We were locally involving so many people from all these different schools. And then COVID happened, and we had to ask ourselves the question, what do we do? Because we can't meet and have that community, have that space without it being safe, or we'll get to that after. But our first questions were, oh, we can't be doing these big service projects where we have hundreds of volunteers come in, because that's not safe anymore. Thankfully, we knew another question. We were like, can we stop? That was never a question that was asked, because we knew we needed to keep providing these services now more than ever, because more families and more people out there needed this, especially during the time of crisis. So we thought, how do we best pivot our programs? How can we adapt to face these challenges, but still provide that consistent and that high quality services that we aim to provide? That's where virtual platforms came in. That's where Zoom came in. Everybody was obsessed with Zoom. So were we over at Nespress. And definitely we were able to pivot Nest Tutors, which is actually in person to start, completely online. And for us, it was really an important lesson too for us, because we're the founders. We want to be everywhere. We want to see what's going on. But it was really important for us also to take a hands-off approach in order to reach as many people as possible, and especially also to cultivate youth leadership, which is something that's at the forefront of what we want to do, is make sure that youth are given that opportunity to lead and develop these important skills and have those spaces of comfort that we've been talking about. So with Nest Tutors, we've been able to have tutors and tutees from all across the world who are developing their own personalized curriculums based on what the students need. So maybe they need help in math and Spanish. That tutor will create literal study plans like a few times a week and meet with them based on their schedules. And it's really cool to see both sides benefit in unique ways. For tutors, they're able to create these schedules and help be better communicators and leaders, and also connect with somebody that they may not have been able to connect with any other way because of technology. Now, on the other side, with the tutees, they're able to have that flexible, that adaptable, that mentor, really, and that friend. We've seen so many friendships be created through this program that was only possible because COVID, that silver lining of being able to connect with people virtually. And again, for us to be able to take a hands-off approach and think, how can we connect as many people as possible? We can't be everywhere at once, but how do we really give space for our youth leaders to take charge and take that initiative and create this amazing bond and have that sense of community even online, which is something difficult, but definitely was made possible with that peer-to-peer connection.
And that particular program, has that just been US-based, or is that expanded beyond the borders?
It's expanded beyond the borders. And actually, when I'm thinking like 2020, we actually had the majority of ours done internationally.
Yeah.
And then we brought it, we saw a lot of interest domestically. But when COVID started, we saw an uptick of interest internationally. That's a question we still are asking ourselves, because we don't know why. But that is something that we noticed in terms of trends. There was a lot of interest that are coming from Europe, from Africa, from Asia. These were the three that we were getting a lot of interest from. Also, Canada was a big one that we were getting a lot of interest from. Canada was mainly for tutors, which I also found very interesting looking at like the statistics.
They really wanted to help. I love it.
Yeah. So I was like, this is awesome. But yeah, so it was very interesting to see how different global patterns also shift interest there as well. But to answer your question, short form, yes, it is both domestic and international. And you can have someone that is domestic either be a tutee or tutor connected with someone internationally.
And I think maybe a possible answer to that question was that, again, that sense of community that maybe was lost because of COVID without the ability to connect with each other in person. And I think maybe that's why a lot of international people wanted to see and have some sort of sense of community. Mm-hmm. But again, some questions, I guess maybe we'll never know, and that's okay.
Or that's why we just keep asking questions, and then it loops back around.
Exactly.
Now, let's shift to talking about the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Now we're going very much at the macro level, looking at the global scale. What are some of the questions that really resonate with you as you look at these goals, and I don't know if you want to give a primer on that or whatever, but that, yeah. So I'll kick it over to you and let you roll with that.
That's a great question. And it's definitely interesting to think about. When we first started, we did not know what the UN Sustainable Development Goals were, because we were in middle school, and I don't think that was a big thing until we were in like high school. So that's actually a pretty new addition, nearly new addition to our mission statement and all these different things that you see on our website. And I think that's really interesting. And again, a way to think, oh, like these things are at the global level, but how do we bring this to the local level that we were working on since that point before we thought about these UN Sustainable Development Goals, and thinking some of our projects actually fit within this framework. And how do we bring that more locally and balancing that with that global, like you said, that macro level?
Yeah. Also thinking about, this is a little bit technical, but like the triple bottom line, looking at people, profit, and planet. And you can see how the Sustainable Development Goals encompass these three aspects in different ways, and how there is a way for you to impact any of these three aspects throughout the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So if you're really interested in promoting economic growth, you can focus on the profit aspect. If you want to look more at poverty eradication, you look at the people, then you look at the planet for climate action. And then not just looking at people, profit, or planet, but people, profit, and planet, you get into that intersection, which I will turn over to Isha to talk about.
Yeah, that was a major question for us once we first started learning about this and thinking, hey, how do we bring this to our community? It was really like, how do a lot of these SDGs, there's 17 of the goals, a lot of them are, they interplay with each other, and they're actually, a lot of them connect with each other. Climate change, climate action, and zero hunger, for example. These two seem like totally different SDGs. They're like, one of them is at the front of the list, one of them at the bottom of the list. You might think they're not even related at all. But it's really interesting to see that these two can actually interplay. And one of our programs, Nest Nurtures, that first question that we asked when we were thinking about Nest Nurtures was bringing this lack of access to consistent food and this food waste that was happening. That actually has a lot to do with the SDGs. And it's something that we learned as we kept going with the program and learning about these SDGs too. Where basically, this food waste that's occurring, that's responsible consumption and production, this
SDG 12,
excess food waste that's going on, that would be going to landfills and contributing methane emissions. That's climate action. That's where that one comes in, SDG 13, I believe. And then instead of that going to waste and contributing to climate change, we're instead redirecting it and instead giving it to families in need, which tackles your hunger, poverty, partnerships for the goals, because we're going in and partnering with people from the businesses, corporate businesses, your Panera Bread, your Crumble Cookies, your Whole Foods, all these different major corporate chains. And also on the flip side, partnering with places like food banks and homeless shelters, people who are giving the food. So it's also a way that interplays that partnership aspect into all the different SDGs that may be impacted by just one action under one of our programs. So I think that SDG model was really cool for us to uncover, because it helped us reflect on our programs and think, hey, this is actually tackling a lot of these different frameworks and goals at the same time.
Yeah, and I think one of the last questions that we will touch upon now with respect to the UN SDGs is the role of youth in, what is the role of youth in accelerating progress for the SDGs? For the SDGs year that's being discussed is 2030, and that is fast approaching. And so really thinking about how the new generations can employ their skills and figure out ways to use their gifts to be able to embrace the opportunities and seize the opportunities to engage in the causes that they're passionate about. And the SDGs provide a really great framework for people to start with. And so we really like to, as Isha mentioned, we strive to prioritize youth leadership within Nest for Us. And we do so in a life cycle approach, which has been really cool to see. And so taking Nest Nurtures as the example here, their food rescues, we have food rescue leads that actually will come in as volunteers, take part, see what's happening, do that for, I would say, a few weeks at least, to really try to understand, okay, consistency, this is what's happening. Wow, I did not know this much food was being wasted. I did not know where this food was going.
It's a lot.
There's so much. It's crazy, eye-opening. And then, as most students do, they go to college, and sometimes that college is out of state, so they can no longer continue in person as much as they want to. And so that doesn't mean the program stops. That doesn't mean the food rescue stops. What happens is we have the next set of people come in, the next set of students, the next set of adults, however that is, exactly, we get those leaders who are now, who have volunteered, who have now taken on a food rescue lead role. So they're now supervising, they're able to connect with the managers, they communicate with us, they've really learned the ropes. They're able to then mentor those that are coming after them, and it becomes this life cycle approach and vice versa. And so that has been a really cool approach that we've seen actually happen organically, which has been cool. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that we have imposed. Once you have done a certain number of months, you are tasked with educating the next set of people. That's not how it is. It has come naturally to us, to our organization. And I think that's been something really cool for us to see how our volunteers have used their leadership to inspire those who join a few months after to engage in this and in similar activities.
Yeah. So I think the question that kind of goes along with that is like, how can we engage as many people as possible and really branch maybe from that local that we started with and thinking about growing nationally or growing globally? Because again, we can't be everywhere at once. So thinking about how do we harness that power of community to really drive about change and also advance those goals that we have of youth leadership and giving people that opportunity to play a role in something that they've clearly are passionate about, going in week by week, volunteering and wanting to take that role. So who are we to stop that? We love encouraging that and seeing them really flourish in that environment.
Gotcha. Beautiful. That's great that you build that cycle, right? The cycle of goodness. It just keeps, it doesn't stop, right? It's not focused on, or it's not person dependent, if you will.
Sustainable development.
It'll keep going.
It is sustainable development.
Nice. Nice. I know that you've done a bunch of different conferences and with this traveling and such. How has it been for you in engaging with these leaders all over the place? You've had audiences with remarkable people all over the world. How does that work out with you coming in the ages that you are? Now, granted, you got a whole boatload of experience. So how has that worked out in engaging with these folks?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I can touch upon my experience specifically with within the UN, because that has been something that's been central for the past few years, specifically for me. So I am currently serving as a World Food Forum Youth Policy Board member under FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization of the UN. And so through that work, a lot of my role has to do with connecting with stakeholders from a lot of different sectors, change agents from all different levels, everyone from community partners to indigenous leaders to UN representatives to heads of state. Like, it is such a wide array of people. And so that has been an eye-opening experience for me. Because you can compare it when you're in a conference setting. For example, when I'm at the UN headquarters, the approach that you take in networking, in conversation, in discussion is very different from the conversations and discussions that you have when you are out in the community doing field work. Mm-hmm. And so these are experiences that have taught me a lot about communication and the best ways to convey your ideas, your views, and your values in a way that resonates with people. And so that has been something that has been integral to my growth specifically, and is something that I have tried to incorporate through my leadership at Nest for Us as well.
Yeah, I think it's also important to recognize, like you said, we are young people. We started this organization, we were very young, and we're not going to sit here and tell you, oh, it was easy. Everybody loved us immediately. Everybody accepted all of our partnership requests and things like that, because that's not the truth for sure. Especially in the beginning, we were so young and minority in a lot of different aspects, race, age, a lot of different things. So you think that when two young sisters come up to you and ask you for any sort of things, you're going to be like, what? No way. Like, they don't have the experience that us adults do or different things like that. I think for us, it was really important. Those no's definitely hurt. They hurt a lot. But for us, it was important to look at them as more of like, when one door closes, like 5, 6, 7 more open up. And maybe if one organization maybe didn't believe in us in the beginning and our power to make a difference, there were organizations that do. So I think that kind of goes along with these different conferences and these big events. It's like, there's always going to be those few people who are like, what are they doing here? They don't belong here in the room, but there's always going to be those people in there that do. I think that was really important to not focus on those people that don't, but really there's a community, there's an arsenal of support that do believe in us. And we have been able to accumulate a lot of partners. And because of that consistency and that hard work that we've had since the beginning of, yes, we have this idea and we're not just going to, those are okay, but we're going to keep working and we're going to keep trying, was really important for us. And I think that same kind of energy and that spirit has kept up with us, even in these different conference settings where we may be told no, we may be trying to hand our business card to somebody. That actually happened to her business card to somebody. And she looked at her and she said, oh, I don't need this. So I'm not going to take this from you. It's a waste of time. Like word for word. Wow. So I think with things like that is, even at this stage, you may think, oh, we've had a lot of different impacts and had a lot of these different things. But even at those high levels and being invited into those spaces, maybe even then your voice isn't heard. So I think it's important for us to remember there are people that are in our corner that will support, like you said, from the beginning, our parents, our family, our friends, all of the partners who believed in us since day one. I think remembering that is super important. And going off those conferences too, we've met some incredible people there who share our same mission, share our same goals. And an included added benefit or a nice bonus that we've been able to see from that is through our Nest Inspires leadership program is bringing those activists, those change makers that we've met at these cool places traveling, and actually bring them to our local community through our different events that we do online. Again, that power of community that can be cultivated through online mediums is so cool. And being able to have them come like free of charge and inspire our community members who may not have ever had access to people like from the UN or from these high level spaces, and be able to talk to them about these issues and learn from them is such a cool experience that we're happy to share with our community, because we know it's such a blessing for us to be in those spaces and learn and connect with these people. So connecting them to the community is really important to us, and we try to do that as best as we can.
And something from a personal side for us, we've also met some of our best friends through the conferences, through the different experiences that we've had, both on the field and in these high-level spaces. And so I think that's just an additional aspect. A lot of people think that if you're engaging in these spaces, it's work all the time. And while it is, it requires a lot of commitment. There are aspects in which you're connecting, especially when you're connecting with fellow youth. We get very excited and we get to connect and talk and share about experiences. We ask the hard questions. We ask the easy questions. We share stories, ideas, frustrations. So it's really cool to see people who are in the same, we call it like social impact friends, basically, those who are doing similar work to us. And we can relate more than we could relate to people who might not be in that specific career path. And so that's just an added level of joy that we get from these conferences as well. And it's something that we cherish a lot.
Yeah. And I also say one more thing too, is even with like preconceived notions too, of when we enter the UN room and people think, oh, they're just kids. I think those mindsets have also changed too, as they've heard us speak and talk about the work that we do. You've seen people who may have initially been hesitant to talk to us or think about our organization and actually change their minds and come and talk to us and different things like that too. So I think there's an element of also, we put in the work and we showcase that, and then it's, oh, okay, like it, and that makes sense now. So I think some of those mindsets, we like seeing people be able to ask those questions, expand beyond what they traditionally think is social impact. So we're happy to hopefully be those people as well who can help change those different mindsets, especially in a place like the UN, which is really cool.
Yeah. Wow. Now, based on that, the word that's coming to me at the moment is hierarchical. Are there any particular questions that you think are not being asked or do not get the attention that it deserves?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to come, and this is, I've had so many conversations about this, with what is the role of young people in sustainable development in general? Because when you go to these conferences, a lot of the times it is maybe like 20, 25 speakers in, all squeezed in to a 2-hour session, and it's timed. They talk for 2 minutes. And while it's very cool accomplishments, it's a lot of, our country has committed this much money, we've done this, and we've done this, and we've done this. But there's no, there has been a lack of description or explanation of where can young people come into play with this beyond just, we need young people, but how? And so I think a lot of that, those questions have spurred our interest in figuring out how to forge these pathways of opportunity for young people to get involved, not just in grassroots work that we do primarily through Nest for Us, but also looking into the policy space and seeing how we can use our voices, use our experiences to influence the way that the law works, the way that investments are directed. A lot of these are now shifting more, less from the service aspect to the advocacy aspect. Mm-hmm. And so I think that has been a really powerful thing for us that we've learned through asking questions and hearing the lack of these questions being asked within these spaces.
For sure. I think sometimes we may see some form of like tokenization as well in a lot of these spaces is, oh yeah, we have like our two young people and our two women in the room. We're good. We check the box. And we've seen that a lot. And I think having them in the room, that's the first step. But actually advocating and using their voices and creating the programs and implementing it, that's really where the true action and the true impact is being made. So I think those kind of questions are underutilized. It's like, what are the actual programs or what are the actual initiatives that we want to create to advance these sustainable development goals, advance all these different action goals and priorities that we have? And I think that's definitely something underutilized as well.
I actually got to talk at a conference at the UN in April, and the session was titled, "What is Meaningful Youth Engagement?" Just that was what it was called.
Nice.
What is Meaningful Youth Engagement? And a lot of people don't have the answer to that. Yeah. I think that's a question that people are still searching answers for, it, ourselves included. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to think about the word meaningful. When people throw out the word meaningful, what does that mean?
So what does that mean?
What does that mean? So like things like that, where you have questions and you think about, okay, we hear this word being thrown out everywhere, but what does it truly mean? And how can we put this into practice in a way that actually integrates the communities that you want to be part of this, the part of the entire decision-making process into the mix?
And so, I think another important question too, thinking about sustainability too, is a difficult one, but it's like, how do we balance addressing urgent needs, like right now, short-term needs, with building that sustainable long-term solutions that we need? I think that's one of the most difficult questions, like not just for social impact, but like for the world in general. It's like, there are things happening in the present right now, but we also need to prepare for things that are going to happen in the future and long-term, and thinking about that. That's one of the most important things that we strive to think about with Nest for Us too, because we're on the grounds, we're seeing like people are going hungry. People don't have access to 3 meals a day, and they're literally like, without this food, they cannot survive. And that's an urgent need that we can't be thinking about, oh, which SDG does this? We need to be giving them the food right now. So it's also that, but at the same time, it's how do we build these systems that are sustainable, that prioritize youth leadership, that we think about all these programs. We don't get so lost in the sauce of the future that we forget about the right now. And I think that's a question that we started to think about a lot now, especially too, like being in college and thinking about future careers and different things like that. And how do we continue to have Nest for Us be sustainable as well and continue to lead that as we go into our careers, as we think about that too, but still addressing those people, those families that we see day in and day out who need these resources, who need these books, who need all these different supplies from us as well. So I think that's another important question to think about when we think about the UN and think about local and global and national impact as well.
And at this point, are you just stumbling, fumbling, trying to figure your way through that? What does that look like for you currently?
So I think touching on the example that Isha had just given, something we started actually quite recently is our community resource distribution. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the work that we've been doing through our programs has been supporting other orgs, but a really big goal of ours for years has been actually directly giving the resources to families within our community who are in need. And so that is something we've actually been able to put into practice with the support of a lot of community partners that we are so grateful for. And it's been amazing to see, even just starting from like over a year ago and seeing where we are now and how these distributions have evolved, the lessons we've learned, the impact that we're making, the needs, how those have changed, how those changed different during different seasons. Yeah. So all of these questions are things that we've asked ourselves over the past, I'm just going to say year for the sake of this example, but it's been really cool to see. And like today was such a monumental example of that with we had our holiday special resource, community resource distribution. Awesome. We had so many families come with so much food. We have to give out so many toys. We give out so many resources. Mm-hmm. And it was so heartwarming to see reflecting on how our first distribution was and how this distribution was. And it's not even the fact that there was more than twice or three times the number of people there. It wasn't It wasn't even that. It was the fact that we have been able to provide so many opportunities. We had families. We had like mother-son duos. We had
people coming in from Maryland, from DC.
Like all schools. Of that was different today. So like reflecting on how things have evolved, again, very naturally, has been something really cool for us to think about. And it's something that we always question in terms of, is this making an impact? Yes. Yes, it is. Because it's making an impact right now. And so next year, we could completely change our model because there might be needs that aren't being met with this current model that emerge next year. We don't know. And so that's something that we're always thinking about, is how do we adapt our programs and our projects to reflect the changing needs and the changing environments, but still maintaining true to our mission, to our vision, to our core values.
Yeah, 4 years ago, we wouldn't have even thought of putting a mask in one of our bags, but that was a need, that was necessary. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of one of the ways that we've had to adapt. And I think what Trey was mentioning, that important word of reflection, is something that we definitely try to take in consideration when trying to balance those immediate and sustainable needs as well. Especially like now, it's December, we always sit down at the end of the year, we take a look back, we're like, dang, we did all this, we forgot already. And we look at all the different events that we've done, and we think about going into the next year, what is going well with the distributions, with our online programs, with our in-person activities, different things like that. What's going well? What are people telling us? What do we need to edit? What do we need to change? What do we need to keep the same? Because some of these things we've kept the same for, like our notes have barely changed since the beginning.
We've actually expanded the groups that we That was, it's still been several years since we've changed that, because that's something that works. That's something that we've seen people, it's not something that's rigid. While we do have templates, people are very creative with the way that they approach the Notes of Kindness. And I think that's one of, that's why we call it a fan favorite project, because it's something that people can take. It's a standardized project that's cost effective, that's very simple, that anyone can do, and anyone can personalize it. And so it's like the super project in a way. And it's something that is incorporated into all of our projects as well. So it's a common thread.
Gotcha.
And it is like kismet, because that's the literal definition or the mission of our organization is make the world better through kindness. So having like notes of encouragement or kindness notes being the common thread, it just makes sense. And so that has been a really beautiful thing, as Ishan mentioned, that stayed consistent, but we change, we evolve just as we do as people.
Every year. And I think that's the most important question that we always ask ourselves is like, what are we doing good? What are we doing that could maybe need some a little more improvement? And how do we ensure that we're still helping and staying true to that mission?
Now, as you get to the end year and you're doing some of that evaluation, the question to me comes up is, you are doing a lot in a lot of different places. What does it look like for you to say no? What is your calculus or your process for coming up and saying, nope, can't get there on this one? How do you do that?
That's a great question.
It's a really good question.
Honestly, we pretty rarely say no. If we really think about it. We really rarely say no, unless it like we, I feel like we typically only say no if there's something that doesn't really align with what we stand for as an organization, if that makes sense. If somebody maybe reaches out and they don't have maybe the same idea, I can't think of an exact example on the top of my head, but it's maybe more of just like it doesn't fit, or it could be better suited with somebody else maybe. But
and in that case, we don't say no. We say, we can't do it at the moment, but here's a resource or here's a path that you can pursue that might help you and might be better suited for you. Yeah. And that's something we've actually learned better as aligned. Being like mentors for others through our roles in different organizations. We've actually gotten to be mentors for other budding change makers. And so seeing young people navigate the same challenges and barriers that we did, we come across a lot of these similar situations. Yeah. And so being able to, if we can't provide support in our capacity at the moment, because we're still young people too, then we are just
and full-time students.
And so figuring out ways to redirect and not just outright say, we can't help you, because you can always help someone. You can always help someone. It just looks different for different people. And so that's something that we have seen as well. And I think when you look at Nest for Us as a whole, and then I'm going to tie back in the SDGs as well, because I think that's something, again, that's very important when you're looking from a time perspective. How can you balance the breadth, so like how many issues, and then the depth of impact within Nest for Us? And this is important, especially with five programs, how do you keep those aligned with the UN SDGs without overstretching our bandwidths mm-hmm. as individuals or and our volunteers, of course, or settling with yeah. just limited surface level engagement? We don't want to just start something and scratch the surface and say, okay, that problem is solved. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to do something, you got to be meaningful about it. You got to be genuine. You got to be committed. That's the word. You got to be intentional with it. And so that is something that we are always, it's a, I would say that's the question we're thinking about right now, always. But really right now is something we're really thinking about is how to manage with 5 programs, provide as many opportunities as we can, but also leave room for self-care, leave room for pursuing our personal passions, like all these different things yeah. that make us individuals outside of the work that we do.
Yeah, and I'd also like to add too, even sometimes opportunities come our way and initially we'll be like, no, like this is weird. But something comes across, something strikes us and we're like, you know what? Maybe we'll give it a try. And sometimes that ends up being like the best decision that we've ever made. So I think sometimes our first instinct is to say, no, we can't, or no, we shouldn't. Like even with COVID, like we were like maybe this is a little difficult, but the important thing is thinking like, hey, like maybe what if we try? It's that yes. And like, what if we did this and it worked out instead of thinking, what if we did this and it didn't work out? I think looking at it from a more like optimistic outlook and hopeful, especially because we have so many different families and people in the community that are depending on us, we always try to think about them first too. Is thinking like, what if we did take this opportunity, or what if we did partner with this organization? Mm-hmm. Maybe something would actually come about that's pretty awesome that we wouldn't have imagined. That's for us, mm-hmm. we never imagined would grow to this scale mm-hmm. or this height. Just thinking like, we never even imagined this. Might as well take that leap and take that try and connect with somebody. Because again, that beginning stage that we were talking about, we had a lot of doors closed on us, a lot of no's. So maybe we can be that open door for somebody else and be that connection or that mentor or that partner that another organization was looking for, and it actually ends up being awesome.
And I want to actually touch upon the opportunity that you had mentioned earlier of like looking back at our early days, right? Really being able to seize any opportunity that comes our way has been absolutely fundamental to the way that we approach Nest for Us and anything because of all not only because, but that's a big part of it, is because of all the no's that we've received. Yeah. And I think we've really valued the power of opportunity. Mm. And for us, speaking at the UN and speaking at a local community fair is on the same level, is on the same level, because you never know who you're going to meet, what you're going to do, how you're going to impact someone. Anything can come out of it. And so for us, if we start thinking this is a better opportunity than this, you get into this gray area that isn't going to benefit anyone. And so for us, it's very important for us to go with an unbiased outlook. What can we get out of this opportunity? How can we support others? And how can we continue to uplift the messages that we are trying to share through Nest for Us? Those are like the questions that run through our head with any opportunity that comes our way, whether it be through inbox, through the people we network with, through social media, anything at all. These are the questions that run through our head. We evaluate those. We discuss. We also are, as you had mentioned, we are distinct people. So we have distinct skill sets. So there might be opportunities that are much well set for me, or there might be opportunities that are much well set for Isha. So I think it really depends on reflecting on those and reflecting on the skill sets and the experiences and the future opportunities that would be most beneficial for either one of us.
Yeah, so it's no, but no, maybe it's no for Shreya, but yes for me. So it's, we try not to say like a hard no ever. I don't think we've ever said a hard no, but always try to think about ways that we can still support and still help or direct or shift that response to make it more positive or open up maybe other doors rather than just having that hard no, because we really try to be open-minded and as inclusive as possible with Nest for Us.
Gotcha. Even in the discussion here, it's been fun with you both, because certainly Isha, as the COO, I would say that's probably the right role for you, just in your answers and how you'll drive into the metrics so quickly and the execution on things, and Shreya in how you're communicating. And so, not that you two won't, you're locked into these roles for forever, right? It's not saying that, but it's like certainly the skill sets that you bring to the table seem very complementary.
That's the beauty of working as a sister team as well. I mean, of course, there are disagreements. We're still sisters. And there is an age difference. I am 3 years older. And so we have that difference as well. we are doing, we're pursuing kind of similar, actually, they're kind of similar. But different academic pathways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm public policy and she's global health. So she's more a little, concentrated maybe on one specific thing, and I'm more of like a broad area. But it's actually been so cool to see, because we actually, people think they're like, oh, they're so similar, they're sisters, but we're actually very different in the way that we approach things and the way that we go about projects. And we've also been able to, like, where Shreya may be weaker, I can be stronger, and where I'm weaker, Shreya can be stronger too. Like, you're mentioning like things about like communication. Absolutely. Like, I'm an introvert. I do like to speak and I like to connect with people, which is an interesting like paradox. But Shreya is really good at connecting with people and talking, giving these big speeches. And I'd much rather be like on the computer, like making the social media posts and different things like that, because that's what I like to do. So it's been cool to also reverse roles. Like, sometimes I have to speak at events. Like, when we do different, our community give back events, we're always talking and telling people, this is the project, blah, 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 introducing us for us and things like that. And we've had to do it for 8 years. So even something that may have been a weakness for us at the start, we've been able to develop those skills and learn through trial and error. And eventually those things like public speaking, which I was initially really scared about, is something that I like doing now. And I've been able to step into that role. And I know for Shreya, things like content creation, like she loves Canva. Before, like, I used to always be the one doing like slideshows and videos. And now she loves doing it because she's been able to learn and grow as we've been able to have more opportunities. So it's also cool. Like, we come in with our skill sets, but we're also like learning from each other at the same time. And developing these shared skill sets too, where like maybe if she can't do it, I can do it, or if I can't do it, she can do it. And it's really cool to be able to balance each other out.
Also learn from our volunteers.
Oh, yeah.
Also the people we serve. So for example, translations. So when we work with different populations who speak different languages, and we want to cater to those. And so, for example, we work for our community resource distribution flyers. We're creating a flyer in Arabic. We don't know a single word in Arabic. So for us, there were definitely probably spelling or grammar errors, and that we didn't feel like was fair to that community at all. So we actually reached out to those who spoke Arabic. We first just asked, does anyone speak Arabic within the groups that we connect with? And we got responses from people, both our volunteers, as well as the people who are actually receiving the resources. And they were willing to lend that helping hand and helping us translate this information in a way that is comprehensible by those who speak Arabic. And so that was a really cool way for us to see how, even just asking, you never know, you often feel like you can't ask certain people for help for certain things. That's not the case. You never know who can provide support in what way. And so that has been a really cool way for us to have this other layer of connection and ensure that we are remaining culturally competent at the same time.
And I think that kind of goes back to with what we were talking about with assumptions too, and an assumption of who a volunteer can be. A lot of people think, oh, like, they're receiving the resources or the services, they can't possibly volunteer. But a lot of times we'll be handing out food, and then the parents or the kids will come up and ask, hey, how can I help, and how can I help volunteer? And we're never going to say no, of course. So we always, it's really cool and eye-opening to see, we have a preconceived notion of what a volunteer can be and who's on the receiving end, who's the donor, and all these different things. But why can't both things be true? You can receive resources, but also provide resources and be that support for the community. So I think it's really cool for us to have seen that in action through Nest for Us as well, and be able to, again, learn from our volunteers, really get that feedback and listen. And also listen to each other and listen to ourselves. And there's so many questions and answers that are happening all the time, even when we don't even know it. And it's just been really great to see that happen.
What do you think is often misunderstood about those in need?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think one of the biggest things is that they are just looking for resources and for food and for education and all these different types of support, which is true. But oftentimes what we've noticed in our own experience is that sometimes all they want is a listening ear, somebody to hear their story, somebody to share that connection with. That connection is something that is so important, because oftentimes these people, they're living alone sometimes on the streets with people walking by them without even noticing them, without even glancing at them. And that can feel super alienated and super lonely. And that's one of the most important things. That's actually what Nest for Us, the name means. People listening may be thinking, where did they get the name Nest for us? A nest is a bird's nest or a family or like a home for people. And we really wanted to be that home or that family for others who may not have that family to that family support of those people, that community that can really help them through tough times. And that for us part means for all of us, for anyone, regardless of age, background, wherever they come from, it doesn't matter. So that's one of the biggest misconceptions that we've seen, is that people just want to have that family and have, these people are out there, they're looking out for me, they're supporting me, they're listening to me. One of our favorite ways that we do that actually recently is our Thanksgiving feast. We always, mm-hmm. it's been 8 years since we started doing it and going in, not just giving out the food, but sitting with everybody, talking in like this nice big circle, having a nice big meal and just listening to everyone's stories. And it's just a sense of, this is what it's all about. The food is great. The resources, they're all super, super important, but it's just being there and being willing and kind enough to lend that ear and that heart, honestly, is the most important that we've seen.
Yeah.
Wow. That's beautiful. Let me pivot towards starting to wrap up, but I do have, and I think you may have actually answered it before, but I do have this question. What is your right now question? And so this is the question that's beyond what am I going to have for lunch and who am I going to get married, or if I'm going to get married, to what is the question that you're wrestling with right now? So maybe you probably touched on the nest one. So if we can do a two-parter and say, for what does this look like in your life with Nest? And then what does this look like for you personally?
Yeah.
That work all right?
So I can start. So okay. I am currently in my master's program. I will be, once I finish study abroad next in the spring, I'll graduate, which means I enter the big bad world and get to engage in a career of some sort. And so for me, I am interested in doing this dual career path of health policy work and then also continuing Nest for Us in parallel. Even though it's not parallel, there's a lot of intersections there. But I think my big right now question is, how can I be the bridge between grassroots work and the policy realm in order to maximize impact in the most equitable and cost-effective way? And this is something that actually ties in multiple aspects of my life. So I mentioned my work with FAO. That's definitely tied in. I do a lot of policy work through that. Can tie in my work with Nest for Us. I can tie in my work with my education, with school, with global health. I have a health policy final tomorrow. So I'm all in the health policy mindset right now in general. But then also thinking about the other experiences that I've had with working with different organizations and youth leaders and getting to hear everyone's ideas and experiences and just having all of those in my head of like, these are the conversations I've had with people, all these consultations, all of these different things that I've heard. How can we take these words and these questions and turn them into answers that is done in a formalized way? And so taking my experience of both working on the ground primarily, but also dipping my toe into the policy sphere, how can I as an individual help to bridge those two gaps to ensure that those on the ground, doing on the ground works, those ideas and viewpoints and experiences are being translated. And I hate doing the up and down, so we'll do a side to side instead. we'll be translated to the policy realm. How can we formalize this in a broader way so we can impact more people in a more cost-effective way? And then vice versa. How can we take those policies and make sure they're being translated properly on the ground in order to ensure that everyone has the opportunity and access and quality services that they need most. So that's me.
That one. Fantastic. I was just going to say, what do I want for dinner? But
I got you.
I actually have a similar thing as well to that, to her question, is because I'm a public policy major too. So I think that's one thing that we're looking at from Nest for Us and personal is we do a lot of grassroots work, but like, how do we take it that one step further to policy? Because I think that's really cool and would be a unique experience to have as we look into the future. But I would also say another right now, our every year I think is full of transitions, new opportunities come up, new things come up as well. And like Shreya mentioned earlier, she's going to Tanzania for 5 months. So that's definitely a big right now question is, what is that transition going to look like? Even the transition for me when I was going to Georgia, it's pretty far away, a 2-hour plane, going to a different school that's not in the area, as Georgetown is really close to our homes, really easy to come and do the in-person projects that we always do. So it's, that was one of our first transitions, thinking about how do we still manage the work and split it up and work in these different areas as well. So I think another thing is just continuing to engage my community as well in Georgia Tech and college campus as well, seeing how we can bring that magic of Nespresso to campus and is again another question. And again, just thinking about all these different transitions as we look into the new year, what's going to be different, what's changing? That's the right now question. We always like to open up our calendar at this time and look and see what are the different projects we do. Something fun that we do is we do like themed projects too. We have like Mother's Day, Father's Day, Halloween, Christmas.
Okay.
Again, trying to make it fun. We had our little Santa hats on this morning. So I think like right now is just thinking about what is our next year going to look ahead? Are there going to be new projects that we're thinking about implementing, old projects that we want to boost up? And again, that thinking about Shreya's situation, how do we balance and how are we going to manage with that as well, I think are some of the main questions. And then, of course, what's for dinner?
Wow. Let's see. We didn't touch on this, but I figure I ought to ask. What, this is more of an answer thing. What is earning black belts touch?
Yes.
Oh, you see it back in.
Yes. It helps a lot. So yeah. We're actually third degree black belts mm-hmm. and assistant instructors. So we actually get to teach mm-hmm. students, which is very cool. And I think it's more than fighting people. We learn, the first thing you learn is martial arts is only for self-defense. It's mm-hmm. taught a lot of discipline. It's created community. It has
our oldest friends.
Yeah. And it's taught us so much about what it means to be a leader. And a true leader who leads by example, who mm-hmm. is making sure to, who knows that there are people who are watching you, who are looking up to you. Mm-hmm. So how can you, that's actually one of our earliest leadership roles,
yeah.
I would say, is I got my first degree black belt at seven.
Me
both
too,
of us, yeah. 7 years wow. old. Being at that front of the room mm-hmm. when you have people that are much older than you mm-hmm. and you're tasked to teach them basic moves. Mm-hmm. And so those were like the first instances where we actually learned, oh, this is what being a leader is. And we were given the opportunity by our instructors mm-hmm. to be able mm-hmm. to be leaders, to be able to showcase our skills, but then also learn from those by teaching. And another skill we've learned by being teachers is when you teach something to people, you actually tend to learn it or remember it and reinforce it further. And so that's something Absolutely. We've taken into the work that we do mm-hmm. naturally. And it's something that has been cultivated for years, even before Nespresso. As something like when you teach people, you learn a lot and you're also teaching others, of course, and they're learning a lot at the same time. And so that reciprocity, mm-hmm. I think, has been something that is carried on in a lot of different forms yeah. over the years.
And I like that you bring that up too, is I think sometimes people forget, they think, oh, like these are the Nespresso ladies, but we actually do a lot of things outside of Nespresso too. We love spending time with our family after this. We're probably going to play cards too, and I might lose. I don't know. I think she won yesterday, so she might win again. But it's like we're still like, we have a lot of different passions. I think that was the main thing that maybe we didn't touch on as much in today's conversation, but is a huge driving force with why we do what we do. And we could have gone to college and left Nespresso. Okay, woohoo, it's over. But for us, we're really passionate about making a difference and continuing what we started since we were in elementary, middle school. And I think going along with that is like sports, our friends, our schools, all these different communities that we've been able to be a part of have taught us so much about the importance of community and about passion and about if you really love something and you're dedicated to it, then there literally can be nothing stopping you from putting that 100% effort, putting that dedication and achieving all the different goals that you have for yourself, for your community, for your team, everything like that. So I think sports obviously teaches you a lot of that, a lot of those different mentalities, but also spending time with family and friends and being intentional and those kind of things too is really important too. And being able to pour as much as yourself in as much as you can. And also, again, take time for yourself, self-care. I think that's another important thing that you mentioned about saying no. And I think a big part of for us is the way that we're able to help people is by taking that time to listen to ourselves and listen to what we need. And a lot of that does have to do with sports and our hobbies and what we love. I remember when we were starting out and Nespresso was really starting to grow big in high school, our sports, like I danced, we did soccer as well, martial arts, like these kind of places were like ways that we were there to de-stress and have our friendship and our community. Mm. And I think having those spaces where you can really just be yourself and be calm with all the craziness is super important. Not that we feel stressed with Nespresso or anything like that, but we also want to provide that space with Nespresso that if anybody in their community and anybody coming to volunteer, maybe feeling burnt out from school, we hear kids talking about the SATs and then all these different different tests and all these different anxieties. But when they come to Nest for us, they don't have to think about that for those 2 hours or those 3 hours they come and volunteer with us. And we can be that safe space or that community that all of the sports and all the different school events that we've been a part of, and that black belt that we got, we've been able to have that community. And again, it always comes back to that, creating that safe space where people can come in and feel loved and be able to have those, the opportunity to develop that discipline and that respect and those different skills across the community. It's really made an impact on our lives.
And yes, we do sleep. Mm-hmm. That is another big question we get out here. Sleep a lot. We sleep at least 9 to 10 hours every night. That is absolutely crucial to our self-care routine to be as productive and take care of ourselves as much as possible.
Because you can't fill other cups without filling your own.
So that's another question. Do you guys ever sleep? Is a question we get all the time and said, yes, because sleep is absolutely essential to us.
So that is fantastic to hear. Clearly, y'all have figured out a way to expand the space-time continuum to be able to get everything done. I leave that up to you. When you get a patent and you make a billion on it, then okay, cool. Then you can. But it is, it's lovely to hear that self-care is a key component to what you're doing. Because amidst of all those other things, if you just grind yourselves into the ground, then everybody.
I also want to be open here and transparent. We are not immune from hustle culture and toxic burnout and all of that. That has happened on many occasions for us. Yeah. But it's something that we have learned over time to take a moment, relax, calm down, evaluate. What are my priorities at this moment? Is this something I should really be pouring my energy into? Are these the people that I want to pour my energy into? Yeah. A lot of these questions have arose over the years as we cultivated relationships, as we have not cultivated relationships. And so I think that has been a big part of our connection transformation over the years.
Yeah.
And really thinking about, while there are moments where you do get consumed by all the stressors that happen in life, you need to learn to take those moments of calm, understand critical reflection is very important, both individually and of course together as a leadership team is very important, not just once a year. It happens very frequently. And so those have been extremely crucial for us. And so I didn't want us to paint a picture that we are perfect human beings, because we are not perfect human beings, even in the slightest. I wanted to clarify that in terms of there are a lot of aspects in which stress affects everyone. And so that is just something that I wanted to put on the table as well.
Yeah, and we always try to make time as well. If we're going through a day and we don't have time for either watching an episode of our favorite show or listening to music, then we think that something has gone wrong. Like, we always need to have some sort of calm reflection time or just time, me time. And I think that some people think we have our Google calendars and everything and we're blocking out schedules, but we sometimes forget to block out that me time. And we're thinking about, oh, we have to block out this time and this time. And self-care is also just as important. And we always like to say too, with volunteering too, people think I don't have the time or I'm too busy. We think, you know, you don't have to have the time. You got to make the time. You make the time to go hang out and all these different things. You make time for school, you make time for, hopefully, for self-care. You can also make time to help those in need and give a little bit of your time for that too. So I think this element of time is something that we think about a lot. And it's something, again, like we mentioned, the passion and that consistency, we try our best, just put as much as we can into what we do. And if we burn out or something happens, we always try to have those moments of reflection and those me time. And even before that, we still have those moments of reflection and me time too, especially at this time of year. New Year's is actually my favorite holiday because I love to look back and reflect and what's going on and everything like that. And we journal, we have our sports, go to the gym. There's so many different ways that you can really, and again, have conversations with each other, with our volunteers, with our family, and really be able to understand and learn. Because sometimes we get so caught up in our head or caught up in the numbers and caught up in the sauce that we got to sometimes have that rein in on reality and rein in on what's important. So it's always nice to have those reminders.
Thank you for having that piece of the conversation. As we covered a lot of ground. We covered a lot of ground today. And so there's almost, it wasn't brutal, but there was an intensity in the conversation with how it was going. And that, I would submit, that piece right there just gave it relief, because as you shared, you're human. You like your sports, you like your music, you like your shows. Yeah, you're fully human, right? This is who you are. And so I appreciate you bringing that aspect. Thank you.
And I think
things.
Sometimes when people look at us, they may think, oh, these two sisters, they've accomplished so many things. They do it all. They're superhuman. How can we be like that? There's no way that we can do that. And the biggest thing for us is we don't want to be somebody to compare yourself to or anything like that. We want to be an inspiration, or hopefully it's thinking like, especially young kids out there thinking, hey, if they can do it, so can I. So that's the important thing too, is like, we want to make sure that we can show people it is possible and that we're still human at the same time, and that anyone, really anybody, can do work like this and help those in need and just take that first step and to really try to do something good for the community, involve as many people as possible, really get that community aspect involved, and then anything is really possible.
Four things that we always say: if you got passion, consistency, hard work, and I'm forgetting the other one. Passion, consistency, hard work, and
heart
is a good one. Vision.
That's what it is. Okay. Wait
a second.
So there we
vision.
Go.
Yes. Passion, consistency, hard work, vision. Those are the four things that we say. If you have these things, anything is possible. Mm-hmm. Because you're able to take what's in your heart, what is in your physical drive, what is in your mental capacity, and what you envision as a future, right? If you're not able to see an idea, doesn't have to be fully crafted out, but you can't see past the right now, even a little bit, then you should probably reevaluate, because it's really important to think optimistically, as Isha had mentioned, about the future, and see, how can I take this forth in a way that works for me, that works for the community, and that benefits the greatest amount of people.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That is a great spot to end on for that. So my question to you is, are there any other aspects of questions or the talking about questions that we didn't actually cover down on?
I think something that we've seen a lot as people have come interacted with us in organization is, what can we do today to make the world better in the future? Or what is that one action or that those actions that we can take to actually make a difference in the world? And I think sometimes people have these misconceptions of it has to be this big, grandiose action. You have to start your nonprofit. You got to do this big action. We did that and it worked out, but that doesn't mean that everybody has to. And we like to think about this question that really we like to revisit a lot is, what if all 8 billion of us in the world did one kind act every single day? Just think about it. I think the world would be a much brighter, a much better, a more kinder place for all of us to live in. So I think just thinking about this power of people and this power of community, and even when you think, oh, I'm just helping this one person, it's like, what if everybody in the world helped just that one person? That's helping everyone, technically. Yeah. So we think about service and social impact, and this shifted mindset, I think, is something that this question is we carry that with us a lot, and thinking, sometimes we can think, oh, maybe we're not making a difference, or maybe we need to be doing more. But it's also like those moments that you go back to, those notes, those big sack of notes that we're helping that person. We're continuing to help that person. And I think that idea and cultivating that idea for people all across the world, especially young people, is so crucial to what we do and the idea that we carry with us since the beginning and all the way up until now as well.
And I think the another question that we carry with us is, how do we encourage others to ask better questions themselves? And better is an odd word, but really just asking questions, right? We don't want our volunteers, the people we serve, to just come at us and go, yep, that works, that works, that works. That doesn't help anyone. The whole point is to grow. Questions open opportunities for growth. Mm-hmm. And so the question that bounces off of that is like, how do we encourage each other to then take action after asking themselves these questions? And a lot of the times, these questions don't have answers. But by asking questions, you open doors and open opportunities to exploring possible pathways towards an answer. And so while you can't answer, if you're asked a question and you can't answer it right away, doesn't mean there's no answer. It just means that there's just a longer path until you get to that
questions.
Answer. Or more questions until you get to that answer.
I'm loving
so
that.
That's just something that we carry with us, and that we try to encourage our volunteers and our community to really think about as they embark on the journey.
I will say one of our favorite questions that we get when that's for us is, how do I get involved? That's like the most important question that we definitely have to bring up today is, you're hearing all of this, you're hearing about the work that we do, and how do we get involved? And the biggest thing and the easiest way, again, the power of technology comes through yet again, is our website. It's www.nestforus.org. We're also on every social media you can possibly think of. And we talked a lot about the work that we've done. We have our tutoring program, and we have Nest Inspires and our Birthdays in a Box.
But the best thing I think is really just seeing it, seeing our pictures, our videos of us in action, seeing the work that we're doing, coming out and volunteering at one of our events. Everything is listed on our website. It's really easy to sign up. There's a way for anybody to get involved, whether it's donating money, donating those resources, donating their time. That's what we love the most. And donating your heart to support us for us and really get involved and join us in our mission.
Beautiful. Shreya and Isha, thank you for sharing with the Curated Questions community how questions have been a part of your journey to impact the global community through volunteerism, service, and kindness. Indeed, you are both points of light.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. And to those on the other side of the speakers, thank you for being here. Shreya and Isha provided a genuine example of how changing the world starts with intent and your neighbor. The call to action is not necessarily starting a global nonprofit, but rather extending kindness and compassion to those around you and looking for ways to fill the needs and plug into existing channels to make a difference. This episode is being released in the thick of the holiday season at the end of the year. As you look to the new year, consider what volunteerism will look like for you and how you can make a difference in the lives of others. Remember to be a light to yourself and those around you. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and producer Ben Ford for the technical help. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures that we are engaging the questioning community. Until next time, keep questioning.